Hour number two on this Monday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day. Good start to your day. Lunch is just around the corner. Hope you make us a part of your day. We got a lot to get into, including this hour and then Vince Ferrara at noon. We'll talk all that is the Vols. We'll talk about their game that we just discussed down in Tuscaloosa. Jeremy Pruitt making it official with his staff being named. Of course, all the stuff was out there, but he makes it official. We'll get into all that with Vince Ferrara coming up at noon. We say hello to Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. He's been covering the team since they arrived here. Terry, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. The E60 piece on Sunday morning on Steve McNair. Did you get a chance to see it?
I have not. I did read the accompanying article that was online with it, but have not had a chance to watch it yet, but I heard it was really good.
Yeah, the article that you're referencing pretty much is what it's about. It's a little bit more detailed in the article, and it was just interesting just to kind of see how Steve McNair's son with Michelle, the oldest son with Michelle Tyler, and just what he's done here and his career path and how much his dad meant to him. That whole backstory was pretty interesting because we know the Steve McNair from the guy that we covered and the whole football side of things. Of course, there is a family attached, and that was more about the family life and what it's like on the other side. And I thought it was really, really interesting. If people haven't seen it, they've been showing it a lot, get a chance, watch it. And if not, until then, read this piece on ESPN.com.
Yeah, it's, really interesting. You know, obviously, you know, everybody in Nashville, you know, knows of Steve McNair and knew of him and what he brought to the Titans and also the work he did in the community. But you're right. There's a family that, after the tragedy, that has to move on. And, I'll share this with you guys. It was about 5, maybe 6 years ago. My daughter's basketball team, middle school basketball team, was playing in the middle school state tournament, and we're waiting to play our game. And there was a boys' game going on right before us, and it was the Brentwood Academy boys' team. And I got a chance to go over, and I got a chance to watch Tyler McNair back, you know, when he was still playing basketball, and a chance to go up and, you know, talk to Michelle for just a little bit, you know, kind of informally, just to let her know that, you know, I had known Steve and covered Steve. And I'm going to tell you something, the kid, you know, I know he's moved into, you know, competitive dance and things like that, but he was a heck of a basketball player, even at the age of about 13 or 14.
Well, they showed that. It came out in the E60 piece. He was very, very good at basketball. But, I think a lot of it, once again, it's the part we don't – and we see this all the time in sports, right? And I mean, National Signing Day had a heavy influence of you recognize some last names where you're going, oh, yeah, I remember watching their dads play, and now they've done the same thing. But, you know, a lot of – kids struggle with living up to their dad's name, and a lot of them do not want to have that pressure of always being compared to their dad, and Tyler certainly fit that mold where you know how that works, especially in high school. You can imagine that's probably what everybody did on an everyday basis, is compare him to his father, and some people embrace that and some people are okay with that. Others don't want that, and it was very clear that Tyler, in fact, his senior year, walked away from it to, as you said, get into competitive dance, and now he's moved into college and he's going that route.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, and like you said, you know, some kids, you know, don't want to, you know, follow in their father's footsteps or don't want that pressure, but, you know, good for Tyler McNair for following his dream and following what he loves and what his passion is.
Isn't it hard to believe it's been almost a decade? July 4th, 2009. I mean, it just does not seem like it's been that long, but it's been that long since we lost Steve McNair.
Yeah, it has. It's hard. It's very hard to believe because, you know, just about maybe a month before that, you know, he would have his football camp at Good Pasture every year. And, you know, and I remember going to that one in 2009, and it was just weeks before his death. And it was, you know, he was still, even though he had retired and was no longer an active player, he was still the same old Steve, you know, kind of cutting up with the kids and, you know, joking with the media guys and things like that, the same Steve that we had always known.
You know, they talked about it in the piece. I was a little surprised Floyd Reese wasn't used more in there, considering he's the one who drafted Steve McNair, but I digress. They knew that this was going to be a franchise-changing quarterback. Do you think they know that right now inside the walls with Marcus Mariota? I know they say that publicly, but privately, what do you think they have in Marcus Mariota? Because they're going to have to make a tough decision here really soon, and I don't know how tough it's going to be. Maybe they've already conceded, hey, we're going to have to, as they said in the movie, pay this man his money. Jimmy Garoppolo got paid, and who knows what that price tag is going to be a year from now, or whenever they decide to go down that road. What do you think they're saying privately about Mariota?
I think that they feel like he has the makings of a franchise quarterback. I think, obviously, with the emphasis that they are putting on footwork and the fundamentals and things that they felt were got a little bit of awry during this past season, that there's some work to be done there, that things have to change a little bit regarding how Marcus throws the football, how he sets up in the pocket, those sorts of things. But I also feel like that they feel like he wasn't used to his full potential, and I think that's the reason, obviously, that Mike Mularkey and his staff are no longer there, because there was a fundamental disagreement between John Robinson and Mike Mularkey over how the offense should run, how Marcus Mariota should be used. I think we all would agree that Mike Mularkey's philosophy for this team was to run the football first, build around the running game, and let Marcus Mariota be a complementary piece at times. And I think now the philosophy has flipped 180 degrees. You're going to see Marcus Mariota be the focal point of this offense, whether it's him running the ball on design runs or scrambles, or whether it's him throwing the football as they try to improve the personnel around him in the passing game. And you're going to see the other aspects, the run game and all, become complementary pieces.
Well, we can knock the old system, but the old system won them 18 games in the regular season, and the old system got them to the divisional round of the playoffs. If it's going to change, and I don't disagree with you, I think they are going to utilize all of his weapons, and they're going to make him more the focal point. Doesn't that mean more risk? I mean, he's already proven he can't stay healthy for a season in a system that's designed to keep your quarterback healthy. So if they're going to open things up, isn't that going to put him even more at risk?
Potentially, but I also think that, you know, when they say they're going to open things up, I don't think that means that they're going to have him run the ball eight times a game. I think that means that there will be a few design runs like there were in Terry Robiskie's offense, but there will be more of those run-pass option type of plays. Maybe some of what you saw the Eagles do in the playoffs with Nick Foles, where he surveys the defense, makes the call, makes the adjustment, the line of scrimmage as to whether it's going to be a run or a pass, and then they try to get the football out of his hands with a lot of three-step drops, five-step drops, rather than making him a sitting duck in the pocket at times.
We're talking to Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. Terry, one of the things that caught my attention with Matt LaFleur was when he was talking about trying to build a relationship with Marcus Mariota and some of the things he's going to try to do, he said he didn't say it was a concern, but he said he's told Marcus Mariota that along this process here, as they get to know each other, if there are things he's not comfortable with, he's encouraging him to speak up. And he said he's such a nice guy, he's such a friendly guy, he wonders if he is the type of person that would say something if it doesn't strike him right. But you also hope that Marcus Mariota is now at a point in his career where he's confident enough, he's been around the league enough to be able to have that good line of communication.
Yeah, and I think that's key. You know, Marcus is such a nice kid, has such a low-key demeanor that I think, you know, maybe there are times that, you know, he's trying too hard maybe to please the coaching staff or just be accepting of things. And, you know, but I think, you know, he has to become more assertive. He has to take control. This has to become his team, so to speak. And I think, you know, you see evidence of that at times. I think you saw it in the last Jacksonville game here, where he kind of, you know, where he was encouraged by Wesley Woodyard and Brian Arakpo going into that game, where they said, look, just play, just do what you do, you know, which means, you know, if that means running the ball, run the ball, do what you do, don't be constrained by whatever it is. And he did some of that. But I think Matt LaFleur wants Marcus Mariota probably to take the initiative to say, hey, I don't think this play, if he says, I don't think this play is going to work, then LaFleur is going to take that and factor it in, maybe take it out of the playbook. Or if he says, hey, I like what I see here, he wants him, Marcus, to communicate with him to say, hey, let's put more of this into the offense this week to attack the defense this way.
Another thing that is, you know, certainly a theory that a lot of us have, I'm sure, is because he had absolutely zero time on the field to work on stuff during the offseason last year, that this is a great opportunity with these new eyes around him, new quarterback coach, new offensive coordinator. And Matt LaFleur made no secret of it, that they're gonna work on some fundamentals, maybe some little things that'll help his mechanics and that can cut down interceptions and then make inroads in some other places. But sometimes I had to remind myself a few times, if he struggled some last year, maybe the fact that he couldn't work on things in the offseason had something to do with that. I mean, I give him full credit for getting ready for the season, but maybe there's an opportunity to take a big leap this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, those, what you talked about there with not being able to work on things in the offseason, I think there are a couple of aspects of that. One, like you alluded to, it might have led to some footwork issues, some mechanical problems, you know, even coming back from the injury. We don't know if he favored that leg and that developed, you know, situations where he wasn't throwing the football with the right
mechanics. Or you're compensating. Yeah, sometimes you compensate
exactly.
Without even knowing it, right?
Exactly. You know, you favor this or you don't favor that, and sometimes it leads to your motion or your mechanics being off just enough to cause a problem. And then the other part of that too is, you know, last year, I think it was four of his receivers were new to him. Corey Davis, Taywan Taylor, Eric Decker, three of them were new to him. He had Rashard Matthews and Harry Douglas coming back. Tajay Sharp got hurt. So most of his receivers were new to him, and that also took away from time to work on, you know, the precision of routes, the timing, and those sorts of things. And I think that also was reflected in the passing game problems.
Terry, what were your impressions when you got a chance for the first time to talk and meet some of the coaches on the coaching staff? What jumped out at you?
I think what jumped out at me was the fact that this group has really, they're buying into what Mike Vrabel is selling. I know Mike Vrabel's a first-time coach. A lot of these guys, you know, this is, you know, going to be Matt LaFleur's first time as a play caller. He's got, you know, the veteran presence in Dean Pease. But I think these guys are all in with Mike Vrabel as a head coach. They like the style that he brings, that aggressive approach, that, you know, kind of rah-rah style, I think, that, you know, Vrabel showed in his press conference, where he's very confident. Even though he's a first-time guy, he's, you know, respectful of this opportunity. And I think that these guys all seem to be on the same page with Mike Vrabel in instituting that sort of element into the Titans' game plans and into the philosophy that goes on throughout the building.
The one position, Terry, that they're going to have to get a whole lot better at is wide receivers. One, how do they go about addressing that? How do you think this is going to shake out with the guys they currently have on the roster? And how much will they address it in either free agency or the draft? And how much can Rob Moore help this, their new wide receivers coach?
Well, Rob Moore is the latest guy to try and fix the wide receiver position. It's been an ongoing issue for, ever since they've been here, except for maybe the 2 years that Derek Mason and Drew Bennett were really outstanding guys. You know, there's always been a guy or two here or there that's done well, a Nate Washington or, you know, that sort of thing. But the group collectively has never really reached its potential. And I think, you know, yet again, the Titans are in that position. To me, I think you have to go out and address it and get a bell cow guy. I don't think that comes in the draft. I think they tried that with Corey Davis. I think they need a number one type of guy. And I think whether that's going out and getting Jarvis Landry, going out and getting Allen Robinson, one of those type of guys, I think, is what they need to pursue in free agency to try and be the leader of this group and then allow Corey Davis to kind of learn from that and take that next step and become that guy down the road. You know, I think they're still very high on Corey Davis, still have hopes for Taywan Taylor and believing that Tajay Sharpe is going to come back and kind of bolster this group. But that's still a very young group of wide receivers with really now only Rishard Matthews with any measurable experience. I think you have to go out and add at least one guy in the draft and then one guy in free agency to kind of lead things.
All right, last thing, and this is it's an unfair question, but just because we started off talking about Steve McNair and there were so many fond memories here, if you had to pick one, what would be a fond memory that would stand out to you in covering him the entire time he was here? A play, a game, anything stand out? And like I said, it's unfair, but if you had to pick one.
If I had to pick one, I would probably lean toward that game in the Meadowlands with the Giants when it looked like the Titans were hopelessly out of that ball game in the fourth quarter, and Steve McNair led them back and then scored on the quarterback draw and won that game. I think it was in overtime. You know, that to me was the signature Steve McNair moment, one of his signature moments in his career.
Yeah, we'll all remember that, and nobody thought he was going to play that game.
No, absolutely not.
Terry, really appreciate it, as always. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Terry McCormick, go check out his stuff, TitanInsider.com, and we appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. We'll tell you, one, who was practicing today with the Predators. We'll tell you about that and talk a little bit more about what you heard. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.